Reports surrounding the situation in Aleppo, Syria are confusing to say the least, with some claiming that the city has been liberated and others saying it has fallen. But the most confusing part is what actually happened. Representative Tulsi Gabbard is leading the fight against ISIS and other terrorist organizations in the halls of Congress, but not in the way you might expect. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has finally admitted that fracking poses a groundwater contamination risk, clearly refuting the industry's claims otherwise. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. I'm Richard Waite, your host, and this is A Mostly Accurate View. All right, guys, welcome to today's edition of A Mostly Accurate View. Again, I'm Richard Waite, as always, your host. And, so some things have been going on for quite some time in a little country in the Middle East called Syria. I've gotten a lot of news about that recently. Aleppo is one of the biggest cities in Syria. I think it's the biggest city in Syria. Well, it's a major city, and it's a major strategic city that's been in contention between the Syrian government led by Bashar al-Assad and his military and the opposition forces, which have a lot to do with fundamentally terrorist groups like ISIS and whatnot. So Aleppo and the destruction of that city and the death of civilians in that city as a result of this civil war has been in the news quite a bit lately, especially during the election cycle when Hillary Clinton and other war hawks were saber-rattling at Russia and using Syria as their reason. Well, now they've found a different reason to saber rattle at Russia, but Syria is still very much in the public eye and for a reason. I want to hearken back to the days real quick of Iraq and the build up to the Iraq War, which was based on faulty intel of weapons of mass destruction and the harboring of terrorists after 9/11. Well, that's what we were told anyway. So keep that in mind as we now continue down this path. So Clinton's loss in the election has not stopped the push of tensions against Russia. Now, instead of a no-fly zone in Syria, they're just going to use cyber attacks that there's no evidence for as their reason to heighten tensions with Russia and with Vladimir Putin. So Clinton's loss didn't stop anything. It was just kind of more of a speed bump. But let's do a quick little rundown of the situation in Syria for those who aren't quite up to speed on it. So, for all intents and purposes, this is what is told to us by many, many sources. So, 2011, many of you might remember the Arab Spring revolts in the Middle East and Northern Africa. They included Egypt and Tunisia. And also, in March of that same year, 2011, protests erupted in Syria after 15 boys were detained and tortured for the crime of spray painting graffiti in support of the Arab Spring. One of those boys died. So protests erupted after that. And Assad responded to those protests by killing hundreds of demonstrators and imprisoning many more. It's pretty awful. Then in July of 2011, the Free Syrian Army was formed by defectors from the Syrian military with the goal of overthrowing Assad. And this pretty much marks the beginning of the Syrian civil war. Now, different factors led to the uprisings. The ones in Syria were sparked by the 15 boys that were detained for spray painting graffiti. But building up to them, everything from economic instability and inequality to oppression, which was then agitated by Assad's harsh response to the protests. And that's basically what caused this civil war. The successful uprisings elsewhere, including Egypt and Tunisia, gave hope to Syrian pro-democracy activists. excuse me. But there were many Islamic groups opposed to the Assad regime as well. Now, I'm not saying that Islamic groups are by nature anti-democracy. I'm just saying you don't see very many governments that are Islamic in nature that subscribe to any sort of democratic philosophies. But that's neither here nor there. So here's where it starts getting really dangerous. Before the actual fighting started, it started getting dangerous because the majority of Syrian opposition forces, like the majority of the Syrian population, are Sunni Muslims. The government and the establishment are Alawite, which is a sect of Shia Muslims, of which Assad is a member. Now, Sunnis and Shias have been enemies for a long time. Even though they basically follow the same religion, the same faith, there's just some differences, but they've been murdering and massacring each other for centuries over these minor differences. So they're enemies. Sunnis and Shias are enemies. So you got a Shia Muslim with a Shia Muslim government and establishment controlling a country with a largely Sunni population. So that's problematic already in and of itself. So when governments are controlled by one or the other of these groups, the problems between those groups get even worse because now one's in control and one is in the submissive role of not being able to do anything. So it gets far worse. Now, the Assad regime is backed by other Shia governments like Iran and Iraq, not to mention their friendly association with Russia and Vladimir Putin, and by proxy, China, who has a defense pact with Russia and Iran. But the opposition forces in Syria are supported by Sunni governments, which include Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, who are all allies of the U.S. Huh. So today, opposition forces in Syria are also backed by ISIS. They actually go under the name al-Nusra in Syria, but they're very much the same thing. We'll get into that in a second. So ISIS or al-Nusra are a Sunni, just like our ally states in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar, just like the majority population of Syria. So Sunnis believe that Shia Muslims are apostates and should die. And the U.S. involvement in Syria is sold as a humanitarian effort. It's demonizing Assad for a good reason. They're claiming that trying to help liberate the Syrian people, the Sunnis, from the murderous and oppressive Shia Assad regime. And that's very noble. and defending the defenseless men, women, and children of Syria is a very worthwhile effort, if that's what we're actually doing. But are we actually doing that? Well, here's a problem. The U.S. says in one speech that we are supporting the rebel opposition forces in Syria who aren't just backed by ISIS, but they're fighting alongside of ISIS, and in many cases are in fact ISIS. And then in another speech, we say that we're dedicated to stamping out radical Islam and fighting terrorist groups, including ISIS. So how does that work? So if we're supporting the Syrian opposition forces, how can we also be fighting ISIS? And further, and this is what really gets me going, how in the fuck can we claim that we are getting involved in Syria because of the human rights abuses by Assad when we're allies with several states in the Middle East that are known war criminal states with horrendous human rights records? Saudi Arabia, Israel, Jordan, not to mention our own ignored human rights violations right here in our own country. So is it because the Sunni Muslims are just slightly less oppressive and murderous than their Shia counterparts? Why is it that we're so very friendly with the Sunnis, but we've bombed and invaded and destroyed every country run by Shia Muslims except Iran, and we're foaming at the mouth to get to them too? Well, something might explain a little bit about it. It's a little group called OPEC. I don't know if you might know about OPEC. Some people do, some people don't. OPEC was a real big deal back in the 80s and 90s. It was an issue for us. But you don't hear so much about OPEC anymore, but it still very much exists. So OPEC, it stands for the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries. And there's 13 member nations as of right now. And those 13 nations control 73% of the entire world's oil reserves. Of those 13 nations, six of them are in the Middle East. Of those six countries, they control around 75% of OPEC's reserves, or about half of the world's reserves, about 800 billion barrels of oil, billion with a B. Now, of those six, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates are all majority Sunni. The other two, Iraq and Iran, both Shia Muslim states. Huh. Now, the four Sunni states control 500 billion barrels as opposed to 300 billion in Iraq and Iran, the lion's share of that going to Saudi Arabia. So basically, it would seem that humanitarian concerns end when the country in question has a lot of oil. But what does that, have to do with Syria? They aren't in OPEC. No, you're right, they aren't. And that's kind of part of the reason we're there. See, and this is why I oppose U.S. involvement in Syria, is because of the real reasons behind it. It isn't about humanitarianism. The media and the U.S. government leaders would have you believe that, but it's not about humanitarianism. There's a video circulating right now of UN Ambassador Samantha Power trying to shame the Russian, Syrian, and Iranian governments for not caring about the death of civilians, especially children. And she is real convincing, too. But when our own allies, or Sunni Muslims who control the majority of the world's oil reserves, are terrorists in their own right and engage in unspeakable and despicable human rights violations, and we don't say or do anything about it, I just don't buy it. If it was truly a humanitarian effort, I would support it. Even though I don't support war in any form, I have to admit that sometimes it may be necessary because there are some really shitty people out there. But every time we get involved in humanitarian efforts in the Middle East, more civilians die. And somehow we end up benefiting from our support of whatever side we choose to support. In most cases, whichever side is Sunni, so we don't piss off our Sunni allies. And we talk a real good game about our concern for the welfare of Syrian civilians, but most Syrians see our involvement not as bringers of freedom, but as carriers of impending doom. Our involvement means more war, not less, and they don't believe we're doing it on their behalf, especially when their homes and schools and hospitals are getting destroyed and their families are dying in their arms. Now, the U.S. media will parrot the narrative that it's the Assad regime that's doing all of that, and we're there trying to help. But at the same time, they'll tell us that ISIS is a barbaric, murderous Islamic extremist group while we're fucking supporting them in Syria. Most Syrians see our involvement as yet another proxy war in the Middle East that revolves around oil. Well, I wonder why. Well, maybe it's because we allow things like this to happen. Genie Energy is an American oil and gas company headquartered in New Jersey, and it's run by Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch, and Jacob Rothschild. I've talked about this before. This was a couple months ago, but they're currently drilling for oil in a place called Golan Heights, which is occupied by Israeli forces, and Israel is an ally of ours, but that little area of land is recognized by the UN as Syrian territory. Internationally recognized as Syrian territory, held by Israel illegally because it's Syrian territory, and we're in there drilling because we've been given rights by Israel to drill there, even though it's Syrian land. So we're drilling there illegally. We're taking oil out of their land illegally. Gee, I wonder why they think we might be there just for the oil. Huh. Or maybe it's because the problems in Syria didn't begin with Arab Spring in 2011, but they began in 2000 when Qatar, one of our Sunni allies, proposed a $10 billion, 1,500-kilometer natural gas pipeline through Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Syria. And keep in mind, Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, they're all Sunni nations. Syria is a Shia nation. Huh. So you got a nation run by Sunnis, three nations run by Sunnis, trying to get the approval of another nation run by a Shiite, and they're surprised when it doesn't happen. Well, actually, they weren't that surprised, because, well, when Turkey, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia all on board with the plan for that pipeline, and of course, guess who doesn't want the pipeline? It's Syria, and Russia, because they export 70% of their gas to Europe, and to allow this natural gas pipeline to get that much closer to Europe would threaten their hold on the European energy market. So Assad announces in 2009 that he refuses to agree to the pipeline in order to protect the interests of their ally and to protect Russia's leverage in the European energy market. Big surprise, right? So when that happened, Qatari allied military and intelligence planners, Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. decided to incite a Sunni uprising in Syria. See, before the Syrian civil war, Assad was actually trying to modernize and liberalize Syria. They had internet, they had free press, they had a flowing currency, and he was even an ally to the U.S. after 9/11, supplying the CIA with invaluable information on Islamic radicalists. Does this sound familiar? It kind of sounds like Libya, where Gaddafi had an independent nation They were self-sufficient. They had gold stockpiles and were getting ready to move away from the American oil-backed dollar to gold-backed currency of their own. But we said he was a monster. We told people that he was a monster, and the concern of humanitarianism, the world over, we needed to go in there and get him out of there. And they murdered him. They took him into the street. They tortured him. They sodomized him with a knife, and then they murdered him in the streets. So, might not be so surprising that Assad was a little concerned about people, about his people and himself and his country when we are opposing, when they're opposing us, when they're opposing the U.S. and the U.S. allies. So, well, if he was kind of a nice, decent guy before the Civil War started, what happened? What changed? Why did he start killing his own people? Now, if he did, and it's a horrible thing if he did, but if he did, it was likely because he saw his control of Syria slipping away, and not in a democratic or legal manner, but in a violent uprising. And he also views radical Muslims as an enemy of peace and progress. Now, I'm not saying that he didn't murder his own people, but I am saying that it's possible that he didn't, because we're finding out now that everything that we did in Syria and are doing in Syria has absolutely nothing to do with a humanitarian effort at all. It has to do with a goddamn pipeline. So, Assad's response was a military response. You know, he saw radical Islamists pulling some shit in his country, and he saw his control slipping away, his power slipping away, wanted to make a strong showing, so he responded in a military manner. Hey, I got a question. When some radical Muslims pull some shit in our country, what's our response? Anybody remind me of what we do when some radical Islamists pull some shit in our country? Is it military? Pretty sure it's military. So we got our money, and we got our bombs, and we got our guns, and we got our drones in Syria fighting Assad under the premise of our humanitarianism and our concern for the treatment of the Syrian people by Assad. It's a situation which we intentionally caused to help our Sunni friends in the Middle East to weaken our adversary Russia by impacting their economy and their foothold in the European energy market. And people are dying because of a pipeline, a fucking pipeline. And every single thing we've done in the Middle East has also been about oil or gas or territory. And we do it on the behalf of our Sunni friends exclusively against Shia states. Al-Qaeda, we armed and funded and trained them when they were fighting against the Soviets in Afghanistan. Guess what they were? They were fucking Sunni. ISIS, who we are arming and funding in Syria, and who was also armed and funded by our Sunni allies in Jordan, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, who were funded and armed by us, all in preparation for this civil war in Syria. Even while the U.S. population is being told that we're fighting against ISIS, they're Sunni. Kids are dying. Children are dying for oil and gas and pipelines. Hospitals are being bombed with kids inside of them. Aleppo is destroyed. But they're dancing in the streets because they've been liberated from ISIS, according to some anyway, and according to others, they're sending out their final messages because they're facing certain death. They haven't been liberated. They've been sentenced to death because Assad has been fighting a civil war for 5 years that was caused by our allies for a fucking pipeline. Now, Assad's not a very good guy. I'll admit that. But I challenge any person to be a good guy when foreign governments are attempting to overthrow you and murder you because you want to be a sovereign nation and don't want the fucking pipeline that they are trying to force on you. So many Syrians have died over a fucking pipeline that there literally isn't any room left in the cemeteries to bury them. That's according to people on the ground there. That's a report from a nurse in Aleppo. So brutality? Yeah, Assad is a brutal leader? Maybe. Maybe he is, but look at what he has to go by. He saw what happened to Gaddafi. He saw what happened to Saddam Hussein. He's seen what has happened to every country that we get involved in due to humanitarian concerns. So when Assad announced that he was going to oppose the pipeline that U.S. allies wanted to build, he knew he was signing his own death warrant. And that's why he looked to Russia for backing. Now he's claiming to look out for the interests of Russia. Well, that was to get Putin's attention and say, hey guy, I'm with you. Now Putin didn't want that pipeline either. And so if Assad was also refusing it, of course Putin is going to defend that. But we point our fingers at Russia and Putin and call it aggressions towards us. No, the aggression is starting a civil war in Syria so that our Sunni allies could build their fucking pipeline when Russia and Syria both said they don't fucking want it. So let's go back. So Qatar proposed the pipeline in 2000. Then 9/11 happened and all hell broke loose in Iraq. So things quieted down, Gaddafi brings it back up, and then in 2009, Assad said, hey, fuck you and your pipeline. And Russia was like, yeah, fuck your pipeline. And then instantly, military strategists decided that a civil war in Syria to weaken the Assad regime would be a good idea. The U.S. was involved in that. Who was president? Barack Obama. Who was Secretary of State? Hillary fucking Clinton. So then the Arab Spring happened. And then the Syrian Civil War started. That was 2011. Who was still president? Who was still Secretary of State? Right. And then the U.S. got directly involved in 2013. Obama, still president. By this time, John Kerry was Secretary of State. But more of the same, and authorizing sending weapons to Syrian rebels on the pretense of reports of chemical weapons being used by Assad. So all of this was under the guise of humanitarian concerns, but it was 13 years in the making. And it was started because of a pipeline that our Sunni allies wanted to build. So you know what would really be a humanitarian effort? Actually working to stop the war. Actually fighting ISIS like we say we're doing. Stop funding them. Stop arming them. And actually fight them. To end this civil war. Then, get the fuck out of other people's business. And let a sovereign nation be sovereign. Stop orchestrating war where hundreds of thousands have been killed and millions have fled their homes, all for the profit of the fossil fuel industry. But if we aren't going to do that, at least stop calling it a humanitarian effort because it's bullshit. And while we're at it, stop with the fake news bullshit because the entire reason you have given for our involvement in Syria is a fucking lie. Every report about Syria given by our government and repeated by our media has been fake fucking news. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about someone who is actually on the right side of that fight in our Congress right now. Stay tuned.
Summertime Chronicles. Know how to have a good time. 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 Have a good time.
All right, guys, welcome back. There is somebody who is actively taking a stance in Congress against our funding of groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, and that is Tulsi Gabbard. Now, many of you know Tulsi Gabbard's name. She was the congresswoman who was also the vice chair of the DNC under Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She came out in support of Bernie Sanders, resigned her position at the DNC because she couldn't be impartial, unlike Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Donna Brazile and numerous others at the DNC who remained in their positions while actively working for and supporting Hillary Clinton. And, well, we see how well that worked out for them. Tulsi Gabbard is also a veteran. She enlisted in the U.S. Army National Guard while in office. She asked to be deployed with her National Guard unit to Iraq for a 12-month tour where she served as a field medical specialist. And when she learned that she couldn't perform her duties of her office and also serve in active duty, she chose active duty and resigned from public office. She's still an MP with the Guard. But she has returned to public office, and she's now serving in Hawaii's 2nd Congressional District in the House of Representatives. She also went to Standing Rock. She went with thousands of other veterans to oppose the Dakota Access Pipeline and to guard the water protectors from the brutality they were suffering by the police mercenaries at the protest site. So Tulsi Gabbard is already a national hero and deserves the respect and the admiration as such. But now she's actually taking it even further, and she's breaking away from the mainstream narrative about U.S. involvement in the Middle East by introducing a bill to the House of Representatives called the Stop Arming Terrorists Act. You can't get any more blatant than that. It's literally called the Stop Arming Terrorists Act. So on Sunday, she tweeted, "If you or I gave money, weapons, or support to Al-Qaeda or ISIS, we would be thrown in jail. Why does our government get a free pass on this?" Now, this is following her presentation of the bill, which was on Thursday. And in that presentation of the bill, she cited the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal with examples to show that the rebels the U.S. is supporting in Syria are aligned with al-Nusra, which is basically al-Qaeda or ISIS in Syria. Now, a think tank that was founded by former U.K. Prime Minister Tony Blair released a report in 2015 that concluded that it was ultimately pointless to make a distinction between the various rebel groups on the ground in Syria, since the majority of these groups shared the exact same beliefs as ISIS and would impose Sharia law if they came into power. So call them what you want. Al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, ISIS, ISIL, IS, they're all the same thing. So Gabbard is co-sponsoring this bill with Representative Thomas Massie, who said that the bill would, quote, prohibit the U.S. government from using American taxpayer dollars to provide funding, weapons, training, and intelligence support to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, or to countries who are providing direct or indirect support to those same groups. Now, in her statement on the floor of the House last week where she introduced this bill, Gabbard said, quote, "The CIA has also been funneling weapons and money through Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar, and others who provide direct and indirect support to groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda." Huh, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar. Weren't we just talking about them? We were just talking about those guys. She went into further detail saying, quote, the CIA has long been supporting a group called Fursan al-Haq, providing them with salaries, weapons, and support, including surface-to-air missiles. This group is cooperating with and fighting alongside an al-Qaeda-affiliated group trying to overthrow the Syrian government. The Levant Front is another so-called moderate umbrella group of Syrian opposition fighters, and over the past year, the United States has been working with Turkey to give this group intelligence support and other forms of military assistance. This group has joined forces with al-Qaeda's offshoot group in Syria. This madness must end. We must stop arming terrorists. The government must end this hypocrisy and abide by the same laws that apply to its citizens. So, ISIS is also sometimes called IS and also called ISIL. IS is the Islamic State. ISIS is the Islamic State in Syria. ISIL is the Islamic State in Iraq and Levant. So the Levant Front is literally part of ISIL, which is the same thing as ISIS. It's all the Islamic State. So different names for the same group in different regions, but it's all the same. And Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar, the three nations opposing Syria for a pipeline, have been getting money funneled to them from the U.S. through the CIA, which is going towards arming, training, and supporting ISIS and al-Nusra in opposition of Assad. And we're supposed to believe that the CIA has confirmed evidence of Russian influence in our elections? Right. But I have a concern. I am now concerned, honestly, for the safety of Tulsi Gabbard. She is publicly outing in Congress the very thing that the Obama administration and CIA have been trying to keep hidden from the American public. Not only that, but she is trying to stop our funding of very powerful members of OPEC who are more than willing to cause the murders of hundreds of thousands of innocent men, women, and children to get their goddamn pipeline installed. I feel like they aren't real concerned with taking out one congresswoman from the U.S. And that's a sad state of affairs when we have to worry about the safety of one of our best and most honorable government leaders because she is shining light on the truth. What does that tell you about the U.S.? All these countries hate America because they hate freedom. No, they hate us because they are dying in massive numbers because we fund and support whoever will get us the oil or the money, and we fight anyone who tries to keep us from that oil and that money. They hate us because we ruin their lands and kill their families. And I'll tell you, the best way to create terrorism is to fight it. The best way to stop terrorism is to stop causing it, stop funding it, and stop arming it. But in the meantime, everybody needs to give Tulsi Gabbard support, thanks, and praise for speaking out and standing up for the right thing. And I personally would love to see a Sanders-Gabbard ticket in 2020. That's a fucking guaranteed winning campaign right there. So, Facebook, Twitter, email, whatever, send Tulsi a message of your support because she needs it. She is literally taking on the entire oil establishment right now. All right. So I wanted to talk about this for a second. Donald Trump's inauguration is coming up in January. January 20th. And DC, Washington, D.C. high schools have all shunned Donald Trump. According to NBC, at least one D.C. public school marching band has participated in the past five inaugural parades, but none applied for consideration this year. A D.C. public school spokeswoman said she was not aware of any band in the district that had applied to participate in President-elect Donald Trump's inaugural parade January 20th. Even George W. was able to get one. But none of D.C. high school marching bands want to be associated with Donald Trump or his election. And apparently, his inauguration committee is scrambling to find a performer. And some are actually speculating that maybe this is why he had Kanye at the tower the other day. Now, I don't really have a whole lot to say about this. I just thought it was funny as hell, and I wanted to share it with you guys. A little laugh. So I wanted to talk about this one for a moment, because this is kind of good in a weird, twisted sort of way. So a little positive story for you to end this short broadcast of A Mostly Accurate View. So the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has now come out saying that fracking can, in fact, contaminate groundwater. The Environmental Protection Agency's final report on a five-year study finds that hydraulic fracturing can, in fact, contaminate drinking water in some cases. The EPA's presentation of the final assessment marks a significant change in the way the report was initially presented in 2015. Energy companies seized on that presentation because it said the EPA found no, quote, widespread systemic impact, end quote, on drinking water supplies. The drilling method, also known as fracking, involves pumping a mixture of water, minerals, and chemicals into the ground at high pressure to fracture shale rock and release oil and natural gas. The technology, along with horizontal drilling, has underpinned a massive boom in U.S. oil and gas production. Now, oil prices dropped dramatically in the past couple of years when oil production in the U.S. Rose to over 7 million barrels a day in 2014 from just under 5 million in 2008. Today, we produce more than 9 million barrels a day, and over 50% of that is from fracking. Well, cheap oil is good, right? I mean, if we're going to use oil, and we do, getting it cheaper is good, right? It weakens OPEC's hold on the world, or at least on the U.S., keeps more money in the pockets of Americans, increases GDP and exports. I mean, what could go wrong, right? Well, opponents of fracking for years have been saying exactly what the EPA is now saying is true. They've even brought water samples to hearings as proof, and of course nobody would drink it, but they also didn't give heed to what they were being told. Just keep right on moving. Business as usual. So, is cheaper oil better in the long run? No. Not when it is going to damage the environment, destroy clean water supplies, and even regularly produced oil done from just drilling, not fracking, it is also damaging to the environment. So we need to move away from it altogether. I've been ranting about this for days now. But now a government agency is on the side of those opposed to fracking. But will it be enough to stem the fracking tide? I don't know. With the incoming administration, that kind of seems very much up in the air. But this study can be used to put pressure on Congress, regardless of the direction that the EPA takes when Trump takes office. Congress, above and beyond, is concerned with their jobs. Yes, they like money. And yes, they get a bunch of it from oil companies. But they also need the support of their constituencies to maintain their office and power and continue to get that money, regardless of where it comes from. So it comes down to this. We have to stand up. We have to let our congressional representatives know what we want them to do. We have to remind them that they work for us. We call the shots. They make it happen. But if we're going to do that, we also have to actually call the shots. The outgoing EPA administration has just provided anti-fracking activists with their biggest weapon yet in this battle, validation. They retracted their previous statement that there was no conclusive proof that fracking was a danger to groundwater, and has stated that fracking definitely has the potential to damage sources of drinking water, and has backed it up with evidence. Now, previously, the industry latched on to that initial claim that there was no conclusive evidence, and now they no longer have that, and the other side does. So this isn't the end of fracking. Just like the easement denial for the DAPL isn't the end of that battle. You know, this fight will never, ever end. But we can also never, ever give up. You know, that's what they want. They're going to do everything they can to tire us out. But we have to keep fighting. We have to keep pushing for the right thing. Pushing for the health of our planet. Our children's future. The future of humanity. And of every living thing that calls the planet Earth home. So, thank you EPA for finally coming through with a proper report, a proper study that tells us what we all already knew anyway. But thank you for that. It's good news. It's good news for anti-fracking advocates and environmentalists all around. And so hopefully we can start a push to ban fracking around the world. Because thanks to Hillary Clinton and Secretary of State, well, when she was Secretary of State, excuse me, thanks to her, she went around the world promoting and selling fracking as the wave of the future. It's a worldwide problem now. So we can battle it here now, and we can use our leadership to battle it around the world, but we have to actually do that. So, all right, guys, that's all I got for today. Thanks so much for listening. As always, you can get in contact with me. You can email me, amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. You can tweet @mostly_accurate. You can hit us up on Facebook. It's facebook.com/amostlyaccurateview. Talk to me. Tell me something. What do you want to hear about? Give me your questions, your concerns, your comments, critiques. Let me know what's going on around you. Let me know what's going on in the world. What am I missing? What am I not talking enough about? What do you want to hear about? Let's join the discussion, guys. Keep it going. Keep talking. Keep thinking. And keep moving forward. Have a great day.
Was a man who swears he's not to blame. And all day long I hear him shout so loud, crying out that he was free. I see my life.